Pierre Lumumba here at Nice Solar Gardens. Today we talk about the process of decolonization, specifically in the 60s. But in order to understand decolonization in the 60s, some historical context is necessary. It is necessary to remind ourselves that even prior to the decolonization process, there was resistance to the whole process of colonization. There are stories of resistance in modern day Zimbabwe, such as the Chimurenga, which means struggle in the Shona language. There is the story of the struggle in Mau Mau in Kenya, the Hehe rebellion in Tanzania, the Maji Maji rebellion in Tanzania, the struggle of Samori Turi amongst the Malinke in Mali and Western Africa generally, and of course the struggle of the Bunyoro Kitara and many others in Angola, Quinzinga of the Ndongo and Matamba. These were processes that were meant to stop the process of colonization. But colonization happened, and the process of decolonization started in earnest. And what is the historical moment at which one can say the decolonization started? That too has a history to it. In the 1800s, there were activities, particularly in the Caribbean, where the Afro-Caribbeans were talking about the freedom of the mother continent. Activities of individuals such as Sylvester Williams of Trinidad and Tobago, who is sometimes considered the father of Pan-Africanism, were the precursor because they were calling for independence. And of course, Marcus Garvey of Jamaica. And ultimately, these snowballed and then led to one of the most iconic meetings in the part of the world that was colonizer's home in Manchester in 1945, the Fifth Pan-African Congress. During that Congress, for the first time, the Africans in the diaspora, particularly in the Caribbean, met. The Africans who were present at that meeting included Ghana's Kwame Nkrumah, Nnamdi Azikiwe of Nigeria, and Jomo Kenyatta of Kenya. And this was immediately after the Second World War. And the spirit of decolonization started in earnest at that time. And of course, as we have already said and noted, there was resistance always at different moments in history. But the struggle then started because individuals, some of whom had been trained in different parts in Europe and America particularly, were then in the forefront of forming themselves into the freedom struggle. And this struggle must be seen from different strands. Those who were colonized by the British, some was through resistance. Take, for example, in Kenya, the Mau Mau movement, the Nandi Rebellion, and those were some of the contributing factors that led to the formation of political parties, such as the Kenya African Union, which later metamorphosed in the Kenya African National Union, and was therefore in the forefront of the agitation for independence, leading to meetings through which the independence struggle was midwife. In Tanzania, the Tanzania African National Union, TANU, led by Julius Nyerere, was also in the forefront in that part of the world. And of course, outside of that, you had the Uganda People's Congress in Uganda, and the Kabaka Yeka, in Uganda. In Western Africa, you had the movements such as that of Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana, Nnamdi Azikiwe in Nigeria. And in the French colonies, we also had agitation that was taking place in places such as Mali and Senegal and La Côte d'Ivoire. And then, of course, we had the experience in other parts of the world, which were very differently conducted. The Democratic Republic of Congo is one such as those, where there was no armed struggle as such, but the agitation started in earnest through individuals such as Patrice Emery Lumumba and Joseph Kasavubu. In the Maghreb, we also had movements in Algeria, and Algeria was particularly important because the French were vicious, and individuals such as Ahmed Ben Bella bore the brunt of this viciousness. So one sees a trend in that part of the world where there is connection. This is important because even in those early days when one thought that communication was not possible, somehow the freedom fighters of the day were able to coordinate their affairs across the continent. And they were doing so because they were aided by the people on the ground and Africans in the diaspora. And it is also important to note that the appetite for the colonizers to continue with the process of colonization was also reducing. It was reducing because many of these colonizers had participated in the Second World War. And some of them were thoroughly devastated. The French had borne the brunt of the German invasion. The Belgians had suffered in an equal manner. The Italians were decimated. The British, while being on the winning side, were themselves decimated. Their economy was really affected in a fundamental way. And then it must be remembered at that time that in 1945, the United Nations had been created in San Francisco, and other players entered into the arena, players who were not traditional colonizers, principally the United States of America, and of course, the Soviet Union and China. And their voices were being heard. They were sending the message that we can no longer have a situation where people are colonized. And we remember after San Francisco in 1945, there was the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in Paris, France. And one of the things was to declare colonization to be inimical to the enjoyment of a people's rights, because one of the major fundamental DNAs of the colonial project was discrimination on the basis of color. And all these factors then did energize the entire process of decolonization in Africa. We must not forget that the independence of India in 1947 was also a factor that contributed to the process of decolonization in Africa. The reason why this is so is because the Indian demand for independence, led by people like Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi, otherwise known as the Mahatma Jawaharlal Nehru, was that the whole process of colonization was wrong. And they were able to influence a number of African leaders. The other energy came about in 1961. When the few countries that had regained independence, particularly Ghana, was in the forefront of calling for the creation of a body that would ensure that colonization did not continue. And it is instructive that in 1961, the Non-Aligned Movement was formed. And later, a few years later in 1900, 2 years later in 1963, there was formed the Organization of African Unity and the Committee for the Liberation of Africa, headquartered in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania. And that played a critical part in driving the energy towards the total decolonization of the continent of Africa. So when one talks about decolonization, one sees a combination of factors. It is not a linear process, but one sees that the energy came not only from within the continent of Africa, but the energy came from outside, and the energy came from different organizations that had been created at that particular time, which then sent the clear message to the colonizers that this was not something that was desirable. And it is also important to note that as we talk about decolonization in the 1960s and 1970s, there was something that was happening. In Europe itself, there were holdout countries that were not willing to let go. One of those countries was Portugal. And Portugal was unique in that particular sense because Portugal itself was a dictatorship. The dictatorship initially of Salazar and Marcelo Caetano. And for that reason, you will find that many Portuguese colonies were not to regain their independence during this phase when most countries were regaining their independence, initially with Ghana in 1957 and most of the other countries in 1960s. There were long, long drawn battles which were to take place in that particular area controlled by the Portuguese. That is countries such as Guinea-Bissau and Cabo Verde, and of course Angola and Mozambique. And these countries, of course, come to the in the next phase of our conversation about independence fought after the 1960s. There was also a very unique phenomena which was taking place, which saw the continuation of the struggle for independence in a very unique way. Two countries in that regard, perhaps three, that is South Africa. And South Africa is unique because in 1948, South African Union created a system that became unique and diabolical, the apartheid regime. And that regime was one that was based on color discrimination, and that also persisted and formed a part of a totally different phase of the struggle for independence. The same was true in Southwest African Republic, which later became Namibia, and of course in what was then called Rhodesia, and which became Zimbabwe. So when one looks at the struggle and what one may describe as the domino effect, one must understand it in the context of a number of things, some of which ought to be repeated for effect. Number one, that there was a movement that had started in earnest outside of Africa through the initiative of Africans in the diaspora. Number two, that the dynamics of the World War II were of such a nature as to weaken the colonizers and therefore to dim their appetite for the continuation of the project of colonization. Number three, that new powers had emerged in the world, and these new powers were not your traditional classical colonizers. These new powers had a totally different outlook in their management of the affairs of the world, and the world then became what one described as a bipolar world, in the sense that you had the Soviet Union on the one hand with a totally different political ideology, and of course the United States of America on the other hand with a totally different kind of ideology. And China also, as a country that was important by dint of its population and ideological orientation, these factors were important in contributing to the drive for decolonization. And ultimately, it is the internal agitation. The internal agitation came about because some of the leaders of the independence movement were individuals who were taken to be trained outside of the African continent, and when they came back, they were telling their people that the order that we have in these countries that are ours but are externally controlled requires that we are granted our political independence, because political independence is going to ensure that we enjoy the dividends of the resources of our country, and is also going to liberate us from this unequal treatment, which was the very raison d'etre of the colonial project. Therefore, this is what and how the colonial project was defeated through a process of decolonization, which led to countries regaining their political independence, and the rest, of course, is a debate that begs to be carried at a different setting. Thank you very much from Nice Solar Gardens in Nairobi, Kenya. We continue our conversation about decolonization, but this time our focus will be the period spanning from the 1970s through to the 80s and indeed the 90s. This is a conversation that is alive and must continue. Thank you very much.